Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, psychics, and even Bigfoot. The show is about to begin. And we are back with another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I am Jason Ophir, here with the other co-host, Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Very good. How's it going with you?
It's going good. I think the weekend has gone way too fast. It seems like there should be more weekend, but it's just disappeared.
It's totally... have two more days.
I got to go back to work tomorrow. I'm not very excited about it, but I guess that's life. I got to work. But until maybe someday down the road when we can be paid to do Paranormal Horizons and be listened to across the country, maybe that'll happen one day. We need to put the energy out there.
Definitely, and I think it will happen.
Yes, I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
I have good faith it will.
So if there's any program directors out there that looking for a paranormal show, we're ready. We're ready to make the commitment. This show was on the radio, a couple radio stations for quite some time, and it dried up. We're no longer on the actual airwaves now, but that's okay because the internet as a medium is always good. We're just starting off again.
We are having a very good way, very good, very, very good.
So I don't know, so tonight what we're going to do is we're going to ask anybody that wants to call in and get a reading from Sherry, the call-in number if you want to call in. We'll do it the second half of the show, so at about 8:30 West Coast time, if anybody wants to call in and get a free reading, you can call in at... make sure I get the right number here. It's 215-383-3999. That's 215-383-3999. Call and get a free reading. But in the meantime, we have 30 minutes to talk. And so what we're going to do is I have a top 10 I pulled up, which I'll get into. And I'm sure Sherry has some stuff she wants to talk about. But I wanted to open the show this evening with a dream I had last night, and it's really weird. And Sherry, I want you to give me your interpretation of this, okay? Because it's just really strange. So I've been really tired the last couple days, so I haven't gotten a lot of sleep. And when I don't get a lot of sleep, I get these just kind of weird sleep disturbances, like lucid dreams and stuff like that. So I was kind of feeling that way last night. And so I'm laying there, and I entered into this lucid state. It's like, you know, you're dreaming, but I was also aware that I was just laying there too. It was kind of one of these weird transitional things. But I was having a dream, and it was extraordinarily vivid. And what this dream was, it's kind of disturbing actually, is I was outside in a beautiful country, and I was looking up into the sky. And there were all these mathematical equations in the sky, like in the blue part. And as I recall, they were scrolling or changing. And it looked like one big math nightmare going on in the sky. And I felt that there was this presence there, this like masterful, omnipresent being or whatever. But I didn't see anything. I just knew that it was there. And so I asked when I was going to die. And the response was March 11th. And I was like thinking to myself, oh, that's not good. And but I didn't ask what year. And, you know, March 11th, 2016 isn't that far off. And so then I asked this being to give me a sign. And I felt a pinch on my shoulder. And so at that point, I was kind of like bummed out because this being told me I was going to, you know, basically die on March 11th. So then I asked the question, was anybody else going to die? Or, like, was it just me? That's just the time I'm going to die. And then I saw these visions of this great storm with lightning. And so I don't know. Is this just some random brain activity, or should I be making my final arrangements?
Well, I'm not a person that's an expert in dream interpretation, but I have no idea. I'm going to be honest with you, Jason. I have no idea why we can dream like that. It could be random. It could be, you know, sometimes these are just symbols of things that are more deeper in our subconscious. I'm going to be honest, and like I said, I have no idea what that could mean. And we would like to probably have somebody who is really good at dream interpretations, or perhaps somebody who's in numerology, like Glynis McCannis, that is very good in numbers or dream interpretation, to join us one of these times and maybe help you sort it out, what that could mean.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not I should take it literally, or because I know, you know, like you said, the subconscious mind, and I'm not really thinking it's anything paranormal, because people have dreams all the time that, you know, they die and they don't die. So I don't know that it's necessarily prophetic, but I thought it was weird. And one of the main things that I thought was weird was seeing all these like mathematical equations in the sky. Like, I am not a math person. Anybody that knows me knows I absolutely hate math with a passion. If it's not addition or subtraction, then I want nothing to do with it.
Forget it.
Because I suck at math, like, royally.
So do I, Jason. That's two of us. Yes, that would be interesting. Very, very good that you're able to remember those dreams. And, yes, we would have to delve deeper into finding out what that means, or possibly what the meaning is. So, yes, we will have to see if we can find a guest that is an expert in either dream interpretation and or numerology, and maybe we'll help you solve some of the mysteries upon what you're dreaming about.
So I better just be on the safe side, grab a sheet of paper and write down my last will and testament, because, you know, March 11th was that, like...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, so I did grab some things to talk about. I thought we could go through a top 10. Top 10s are kind of fun, and this is kind of paranormal, kind of not, and I thought it would be interesting. It's the top 10 cryptids that turned out to be real. And cryptozoology is a study of hidden animals. It's basically, you know, like Bigfoot is considered to be cryptozoology. And cryptozoology is often the stuff of legends, and it's written off as myths or elaborate hoaxes. Some of the other famous cryptids... I can't talk tonight. Some of the famous cryptids are the Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, Chupacabra... And all those creatures are shrouded in mystery. So I got a top 10 of that we can talk about. And if you're ready, Sherry, I can just start going down the list, and we'll learn about some things that used to be cryptozoological that actually turned out to be real.
Yay, let's go for it.
All right, number 10. And this is not in any particular order of significance, by the way. All right, the devil bird. The devil bird, or ulama, is a frightening horned bird of Sri Lankan folklore. This elusive creature is rarely seen, but is often heard in the form of its infamous blood-curdling screams. Its cries are said to resemble the wailing of a woman and are perceived by locals as an omen of death. For centuries, the nocturnal cries of the devil bird were the only evidence of its existence. And the Western science wrote it off as superstition. But in 2001, the devil bird was identified as a new species of owl, the spotted-bellied eagle owl. And I don't even want to try and pronounce its actual name. You know how, like, animals have their... I don't even know what it's called, but the fancy names. Like,
right.
Bubo Nepalensis. The largest of the Sri Lankan owls, I hate trying to say this word, Bubo Nepalensis, matches the the description of the ulama perfectly, down to its characteristic screech and tufted horns, although some debate still remains as to the true identity of the devil bird. The spotted-bellied eagle owl stands as the most compelling source of inspiration for the mysterious creature. So, can you imagine you're out camping and there's a devil bird out there? And
ooh,
it,
crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like a screaming woman. So I can see, you know, back in ancient times, if like you're one of these Sri Lankan tribes hearing the howling of a woman, to believe that it was something paranormal or a mythical creature, when in fact it's just an owl with a really obnoxious screech. Here's another one. Number 9, Ziphius. In medieval folklore, the Ziphius, or water owl, was a monstrous nautical creature said to attack ships in the northern seas. It possessed the body of a fish and the head of an owl, complete with massive eyes and a wedge-shaped beak. Ziphius means sword-like in Latin, may refer to the beast's fin, which is said to pierce the hulls of ships like a sword. Today, the inspiration for the Ziphius is known as Culliver's beaked whale, a widespread species of beaked whale. Also known as the goose-beaked whale, this creature is found as far north as the Shetland Islands and as south as Tierra de Fuego, at the south tip of South America. It is the only member of the genus Ziphius, which, that's the word I was looking for, the genus names. I couldn't think of that at the time. It's the only member of the genus Ziphius, which bears the name of its legendary identity. Some additionally attribute the inspiration of the Ziphius to the orca or to the great white shark, based on some descriptions of the beast as a predator to seals. So, basically, there is a whale out there that I'm looking at a picture of it. It looks kind of different. So that's another creature that was thought to be mythical, and it turned out to be more than likely this particular whale. I don't think there's anything in the oceans that, or any sea creatures that have fins that could pierce the hulls of ships. But I'm sure the story started somewhere. Number 8, the Bond. These names are hilarious. Bondigazu. The Bondigazu, also called the Man of the Forest, is a legendary ancestral spirit of the Moni people of western Indonesia. Described as a tree-dwelling creature, the Bondigazu resembles a small man covered in black and white fur. It is said to be a tree climber, but often stands on the ground in a bipedal stance. In the 1980s, a photograph of the Bondigazu was sent to Australian research scientist Tim Flannery, who initially identified the creature as a young tree kangaroo. Back in May 1994, Flannery conducted a wildlife survey of the area and discovered that the animal in the picture was new to science. So, I'm just kind of looking on here. It's a rare creature. It's fairly rarely seen. The first evidence of the creature was only in skins, and to this day, none of these exist in captivity. So this furry man-like creature is more than likely the Bondigazu, which is, it's actually very cute. I wish you could see a picture of this, Sherry. It's hard to describe. Like a cross between, I don't know, it's weird. It almost looks kind of like a bear-like, but small. It's really small. So, yeah, and here's another one that's kind of interesting. It seems that the kangaroo was also once believed to be mythical. Early explorers to Australia described bizarre creatures never before seen by Europeans. They wrote of creatures with heads like deer that stood upright like men and hopped like frogs. The creatures sometimes sported two heads. That's, you know, like the baby in the pouch. That's
right.
Awesome. Could you imagine seeing one of those for the first time? That would be so trippy. Such accounts were understandably disregarded and ridiculed by fellow colleagues. That changed in 1770 when a dead species of this odd beast was exhibited in England as a public curiosity. Today, this creature is known as a kangaroo, a widespread marsupial endemic to Australia, well known for their leaping abilities and female pouch for carrying their young. Kangaroos are a nationally recognized icon of Australia. four species of kangaroos exist. There's the red kangaroo, the western gray kangaroo, the western gray kangaroo. So there's two western gray kangaroos, and the antelopine kangaroo. So those are the four species of kangaroos. So I can see how things like Bigfoot get, because I don't believe in Bigfoot, but that's, the kangaroo is a good example of people that are not familiar with these creatures. They're out in nature. They see this strange beast, and then there's all sorts of rumors about it. And so I can see maybe people misidentifying like bears as Bigfoot and stuff like that. So,
that could be, yes.
And now everybody knows what a kangaroo is, but back in the 1700s, it was not a known creature, and people thought it was strange. Then we have, here's a really weird creature, the platypus, the duck-billed platypus. When European naturalists first encountered this bizarre creature, they were understandably baffled. Accounts described it as a venomous egg-laying mammal with a duck bill and beaver tail. Many prominent British scientists deemed it as a hoax when presented with a sketch and pelt in 1798. Even when offered as a corpse, scholars suspected that it was an elaborate sewn-together fraud. Today, this bizarre but fascinating creature is known to as a platypus, one of only five extant monotremes, which means egg-laying mammals. While formally recognized by science, it is no less unique today. This semi-aquatic creature, native to eastern Australia, swims with webbed feet, uses electrolocation to hunt, and possesses an ankle spur that in males can deliver a powerful injection of venom. While non-lethal to humans, this venom is excruciatingly painful and is not responsive to most painkillers. Did you know that platypuses have a venom?
No, I didn't know that. Wow.
Actually, I actually did know that because I'm like a nature nerd. It's really fascinating.
I thought they were cute.
Yeah, I don't think, at least you wouldn't want to play with the males, you know, get like jabbed with one of their spurs. But yeah, it's really interesting that they have a venom. Then there, here's another one, the sea serpent, which is a generic name. For centuries, the sea serpent persisted as the most captivating cryptozoological mystery in the world. Sightings of these mysterious and often frightening creatures have occurred plentiful throughout history, even up until the 20th century. From northern European waters to eastern North America coast, tales of serpentine aquatic beasts of colossal proportions have dotted the globe. Their descriptions vary, ranging from horse-headed creatures to massive snakes. Cryptozoologists speculate that various misidentified animals can account for sea serpent sightings. However, one elusive species is particularly likely source for many of these accounts. The oarfish, also known as the ribbon fish, is a massive elongated fish found worldwide. It is the longest of all bony fish, and the longest is being recorded as 56 feet in length. The oarfish typically dwell in the deep ocean, but are occasionally washed ashore in storms and linger at the surface when they're near death. A live oarfish was filmed for the first time in 2001, demonstrating its rarity and reclusive nature. So that's, you know, a nearly 60-foot serpent. That's pretty big.
That's pretty, yeah, that's amazing. Wow.
It's a good thing they live in the deep, because could you imagine if they did not live in the deep and you're out there having a good time, you know, up to your waist in the water and having 56 foot long serpent brush up against you?
Oh my goodness. I think I'd die of shock. I don't swim anyway.
I love swimming in the rivers, and I haven't been able to swim in the ocean in a very long time, but I used to love it as a kid because we lived in Southern California. But one of the things that always freaks me out is stuff touching me that I can't see. And,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like, and the other thing that really freaks me out is I was scuba diving for a while, and one of the fears I've always had, because I was scuba diving in the rivers around here up in Oregon, was I was always afraid I was going to come across a corpse in the water, you know, be 20, 30 feet underwater and then turn around and like, here's this decaying corpse. That's another thing I've been afraid of. But yeah, I don't like things touching me I can't see. Hell, I don't even
That's
like things
thing.
Touching me I can see.
That's the thing. And when I moved up from California, from the Bay Area, and coming up from to Oregon, is that you can't see when people say, "Oh, let's go swimming in the lake or in the rivers." You can't see anything.
I know.
Scary, or you know, yeah. Just,
And so we're down to number three now. Here's another animal that everybody should be familiar with: the mountain gorilla. For centuries, tales of large ape men in East Africa have captivated explorers and natives alike. Numerous tribes have legends of massive hairy creatures that would kidnap and eat humans. Oh, that sounds lovely. And overpower them with their ferocity and strength. The creatures go by many names, among them Ngila, Ngagi, and Ngeena. In the 16th century, English explorer Andrew Battell spoke of man-like apes that would visit his campfire at night, and in 1860, explorer Du Chaillu wrote of violent, bloodthirsty forest monsters. Oh, that sounds awesome. Bloodthirsty forest monsters. Up until the 20th century, many of these tales were ignored and discounted. In 1902, German officer Captain Robert von Bering shot one of these man-apes in the Virunga region of Rwanda. He brought it back to Europe with him and introduced the world to a new species of ape, the mountain gorilla. Today, mountain gorillas are known to be communal, largely docile herbivores that live in the Virunga Mountains in Central Africa. They also live in the Bwindi National Park in Uganda. Mountain gorillas are threatened by poaching and civil unrest. They are elusive and often unseen in their activities. No more than 400 remain in the wild today. One of the earliest written accounts of gorillas may have come from Hanno, the navigator, a Carthaginian explorer who documented his travels along the African coast in 500 BC. Hanno describes the tribe of gorillae, roughly meaning hairy people. It is unknown whether Hanno refers to gorillas or another species of ape or humans. Nevertheless, his description served as the inspiration for the modern name gorilla. So yet again, another case of bloodthirsty forest-dwelling monsters. Turns out, well, yeah, they're mountain gorillas.
Interesting.
And they are scary. I always heard that monkeys and gorillas and orangutans and all that were super strong, like much stronger than humans. And there I don't remember how many years ago, it was a few years ago, some lady was handling a pet orangutan, I want to say it was, and it ate her face off, like literally ate her face off.
Wow.
She survived, but she doesn't have a face anymore. So I am,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
This, it's not a creature. Anything in the ape family, monkeys, I'm not interested. They can just stay in the
zoo. I wonder
if
it makes a big difference if they're in captivity. I'm sure that there is, aren't they? They have a lot of human interaction and handling and being able to get used to the humans.
Yeah, and you see a lot of that, like in the natural parks. You know, they always say don't feed the animals. And I see a lot of videos on YouTube of, you know, elephants and, I mean, every kind of animal you can imagine coming up to the car doors. People thinking, oh, look, it's cute. You know, let's break out the iPhone and get a selfie with the, you know, the monkeys or whatever it is. But, yeah, animals are unpredictable. You know, many years ago, what was it, Siegfried and Roy? Which one was attacked by, he was attacked by one of the Siberian tigers. I think the tiger's name was Mantic. Tiger's name was, I think it was Manticore. How I know that, I don't even know. I have a very selective memory, but yeah. Animals are unpredictable.
Especially wild. They're just wild, and you just got to be cautious, that's all. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Do you think that they can sense, like, people's intent or, like, their energy?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. They know more probably than we even can even fathom or even comprehend. And they can even think of, they say that animals are so smart, they can almost feel like before we have an earthquake or tsunami, they can sense something is wrong and react to it, you know, as much as they're able to before we even sense something is going to come.
Yeah, I've heard that before, like dogs everywhere barking before there's going to be a big earthquake.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. We have a guest later on in the last Sunday of January. She's an animal communicator, and she can go into more of how they communicate and how we can communicate with the different animals.
Oh, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
So I noticed we do have a caller. I'm just going to finish these last two real quick, and then we can go to a caller. And it's about halfway through the show, and hopefully they're calling in to get a reading, and then you can give somebody a reading.
Okay.
So we have two more here. Just be a couple more minutes.
No problem.
So number two, the Okapi. Central African tribes and ancient Egyptians described and depicted a bizarre creature for centuries, colloquially dubbed the African unicorn by Europeans. It is known locally by such names as the Ati or the O. Some of these words are hard for me. Opati. It resembles a cross between a zebra, a donkey, and a giraffe. That's an interesting mix. Despite descriptions from explorers and even skins, Western science rejected the existence of such creatures, viewing it as nothing more than a fantastical chimera of real animals. Determined expeditions uncovered nothing, and it would seem that the African unicorn was just as mythical as its namesake. This changed in 1901 when Sir Harry Johnston, the British governor of Uganda, obtained pieces of a striped skin and even the skull of the legendary beast. Through this evidence and the eventual capture of a live specimen, the animal now known as the Okapi was recognized by mainstream science. The Okapi is no less unusual today. It is the only living relative of the giraffe, sharing a similar body structure and its characteristic long blue tongue. However, the markings on the back of its legs resemble that of a zebra's stripe. Okapis are solitary creatures that remain captivating to their scientists. Although they're not endangered, there is still much to learn about their habits and lifestyle. The Okapi, interestingly, was the symbol of the now defunct International Society of Cryptozoology and remains the persisting icon of cryptozoology to this day. It's interesting. And I have a picture here. It is weird. It's like the body of a horse with the head of giraffe, and then it's got the stripes on its legs of a zebra. It's crazy. It's really weird. I've never seen anything like that before, and I did not know that existed. It's awesome.
You'll have to share with the viewers where you can see the picture.
Yeah, you could probably go to Google Images and just Google Okapi. It's worth Googling because it is really strange looking. All right, the last one, we'll go pick up the caller if they're still there. The giant squid. Tales of an enormous squids has circulated throughout the world since ancient times. Aristotle and some guy named Pliny the Elder both described such monsters. Legends such as Lucia, which I guess means Caribbean, Cilia, which means ancient Greece, and the sea monk, which means medieval Europe. I don't get some of this stuff here. They all describe a bizarre, often dangerous nautical creature. Perhaps the most famous legendary squid is the Norse kraken, a monstrous tentacled beast as large as an island that devoured ships whole. Prior to the 1870 scientific opinion, held such creatures as nothing more than ridiculed myths on par with mermaids and sea serpents. So in the 1870s, they thought it was absolutely ridiculous that giant squids existed. Despite this, investigations into the existence of the legendary kraken took place as early as the 1840s. Danish zoologist John Streensup methodically researched and cataloged giant squid sightings and strandings. He eventually examined the beached corpse and designated the beast's scientific name as Archithetheus. Yeah, right. I think I need to go back to school and start learning how to pronounce some of these names. But it's kind of funny because I work in the medical field and I understand a lot of medical terminology, which is really hard, but some of these ancient genus names are really throwing me for a loop. But even though this guy had discovered beached corpses and was documenting it thoroughly, fellow scientists remained skeptical and continued to dismiss his accounts. In 1870, the skepticism stopped as more carcasses were discovered that were beached in Labrador and Newfoundland. Tentacles and complete corpses revealed to the scientific world that the giant squid was indeed real. Today, this creature remains just as mysterious and rare. Typically, living at great depths, giant squid sightings are uncommon and often undocumented. For a century, scientists dutifully attempted to observe it in its natural habitat, but failed. Only in 2004 were a group of Japanese scientists able to capture a live giant squid on camera, taking 500 photographs before the creature swam back into the blackness. There's many questions that remain concerning the giant squid. Very little is known about its habits and its lifestyle, and it's still unknown how large the giant squid can grow. The largest species are between 30 and 40 feet long, weighing over 100 pounds. However, its close relative, the colossal squid, may grow to much greater sizes, as evidenced by the size of sucker marks on sperm whales. To this day, the giant squid remains a legendary example of how fantastic animals on Earth can be. That Neo copy. So, yeah, I don't think there are squids large enough to take down a ship, but who knows? Maybe there's a giant one in the ocean somewhere.
Boy, they're big. Some of them can get really, really huge. And it's amazing how they can squeeze in a little spot, you know, a really small crevice or something. Very interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's another reason. Well, it's interesting that, you know, a lot of the scariest things in the ocean live at the greatest depths. Have you ever seen an anglerfish, what that looks like?
No.
I think that's the one that has this little antennae. It's got really big teeth, and it's got this antennae that comes out its forehead, and it's got a little light on the end of it. I think that's
You're
the
kidding.
Yeah, well, there's no light down there, so they have to attract, you know, what they're going to eat. And so it's got this little light that comes off of its head on this little antennae. And I want to say it's an anglerfish. I'm not 100% sure, but it's really super scary looking. So it's a good thing these giant squids live at the depths because, yeah, that's pretty scary.
They make the jaws look pretty good, make them pretty dangerous looking, huh?
Yeah, Google it. It's like the most terrifying thing ever. I think they're really small, but it's fast. Just, you know, the whole natural world is just fascinating, how things adapt to survive.
They do.
All right, so we do have a caller, and if you're ready to go, I'll keep my trap shut for a little bit, and hopefully the caller wants to get a reading from you. So we'll bring him on.
Okay, welcome to Paranormal Horizons.
Hello.
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 Am I on?
You are on.
Am I on?
You
oh,
are on.
Right on. Oh, man.
Sorry,
is this your
delay.
First time on radio?
First time listener, long time caller. No, this is my first time, yes.
That's great.
Okay, let me get you off a speakerphone so I can hear you better. That'd be good.
Okay.
I have your speakerphone because I was listening, so right on. Hey, now I can hear you guys.
Cool.
I can hear
well,
you loud and clear.
Were you interested in getting a free reading from Sherry?
Oh, absolutely. That'd be awesome.
All right, it's all you, Sherry.
Have you had a reading done before?
Never.
Never. Oh my gosh. That's great. Okay. So, well, let's see what's happening here. Is there anything you want to know? Do you have any questions or anything right now? Should I ask first?
I don't have any questions, no, ma'am.
Okay.
Except for I love your guys' show. I mean, or should I be quiet?
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you.
I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
You don't know what to do. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Am I supposed to be thinking of something? Or?
No, no. Sometimes, you know, people may have a question and they have certain things they want to, you know, they just want to have a question. Let me think of what's going on with you here. Okay, so what's going on? Do you have a mother figure that's crossed over?
Oh, no.
It doesn't have to be
no.
A mother. It could be a mother figure. So this is what I'm sensing, is a mother figure
no.
That's crossed over.
Not somebody unless she just passed away now. But no, I have
okay.
Not, unfortunately, no.
That's all right. That's okay. Just think about somebody, because there's somebody that's like a mother figure that's crossed over, and it does not have to be a mom. Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody
no, I. No, I don't. I don't have anybody that has deceased or passed away or anything.
That's right. Okay. That's all right. Just let it go. I'm just writing it down. Write it down because it might happen. You know, might come up later on.
Okay.
So, I get the feeling that the reason you're calling is you're just curious. Is that correct?
Oh, I'm always curious. I'm always curious. So I'm curious about everything. You know, like what in the heck is going to happen next? You never know. You know, it's this world. You know, I think of the United States of just being so young still. I mean, we're just a little over 200 years old, and technology has advanced so much within the 50 years that I've been around or more, and
mm-hmm.
It's just phenomenal of what's going to happen next. I mean, I know that this technology is not from our own intellect. I don't believe that at all. I believe that this technology is being passed down to us from somewhere that's definitely a higher being or power. And it's just amazing how sometimes I feel like I'm a petri dish in a laboratory in some, you know, hidden away basement of some laboratory, you know, that we are all. It's just weird, man, how all this stuff is happening, and it's hard to figure it out.
Right.
It's mind baffling.
You're very
ahead
of your time, definitely.
This world has reset itself so many times, you know. I mean, there's evidence that there's been life here before, you know, our generations, and everybody has their weird beliefs, and the books that are out there are just, you know, so ridiculously methodically put together that people base their whole lives after, and not what they feel like it should do within their own selves, you know, within their own mindset or their own way that they are convicted or how they feel. You know, I'm blown away with it all. Sometimes it's so much that I can't even listen. I have to just turn myself off.
Right. And I know you question everything. I get that feeling too. You get questioned everything.
Yeah, I'm pretty bi-curious.
Yeah. That's pretty much. Let's see what's going on else. You know, you seem like you're very balanced. I get a sense that you not only question everything, but you also, you're very balanced with your emotions, okay? So, you need to go and, something, you need to calm yourself. This is the first thing that I'm getting the messages, is that the only thing that I notice that maybe that needs to be put into balance is being able to sit and be quiet. You've got a lot of mind chatter. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. I was so, this morning I woke up early, and I felt like I needed to get things done, and
mm-hmm.
then by noon, I couldn't even keep my eyes open. I just went and laid in the bed, and I just slept for the
like 5 hours straight.
Wow.
You know, I just crashed. I just crashed out. And then, and then I'm actually on call tonight. So whenever I get called in, I have to run back and forth, and it's amazing, you know.
You're on mental overload.
Yeah, you
need to just kind of balance yourself out where you can just sit and calmly be alert, but being able to just ground yourself. Instead of being in your head all the time, being able to ground yourself so that you can see the balance. You know, other than that, I think you're all right. You know, I don't think you have, I don't get that feeling where you have a lot of, issues or baggage that needs to be come through. I just feel like you know where you're at, but I think you're just the reason why you're calling is you're just curious. I don't think there's any issues per se that needs to be addressed, and we need to go in depth as far as mental and emotional issues that I need to question or anything else. So that's what I'm getting that feeling. You know, I like your energy, and it's great. Thank you for listening
to
us.
Oh, no, I appreciate you taking my call. Hopefully there's other people, so I want to give them a chance, too.
We don't have anybody else right at the moment, but I did want to say you were talking about petri dishes and experiments and technology from somewhere else, and I totally get that. And you also said that the Earth has renewed itself many times, and that's true. I mean, there are, like, ruins in the ocean, you know. There's ocean where used to be land, and, like, this world, like anything else, has to go through a cleansing process at some point. And I think we take, just as humanity, we take our existence for granted. Like, everything's going to be here. Everything's going to stay the same. You know, humanity is on a razor's edge, and most people don't even realize it. This could all disappear tomorrow.
And I feel that it's really close to that, because if you look at how it's what, you know, the whole planet is way overpopulated. And with all the resources that we deplete on a daily basis, and just how all this war and all the technology and all the radio frequencies and all the just, it's all very high energy, cancer causing, ozone depleting, not just the ozone, but all the layers of the atmosphere are getting affected by what the planet is coming to. And eventually everything is going to have to stop, and the Earth is going to shift, or something's going to give. And I look at the Earth as being a hard shell with a gooey center, and eventually something's going to slip, and all these continents are just going to rip around the whole, and it's just going to be cataclysmic and catastrophic. And I'm not here to be a bummer or a downer, or, you know, trying to tell people that, it's the end of times, and run around the street half naked with signs and sandwich boards saying that, you know, Jesus is coming. But there is people out there that have been doing that for hundreds of years. When I say hundreds of years, the United States has only really been formed as a country, or as the United States, as a little over 200 years is what I'm trying to say, our country. So it's just all coming down to the wire, and just makes me wonder what's going to happen next, you know, and when is it going to happen? And if we knew the answers to that, then wouldn't that be something? But to be prepared, it doesn't matter if you're prepared or not, because when it comes, it's going to come hard. And if it just be, people going crazy like they are basically now all over the, you know, world, you got all these religions fighting each other. You got ethnic people, racists, different things are going on. And you got people that are in communities that are forming their own governments. There's one in Idaho right now, I believe, that's the Citadel, that's forming its own government. And just all this stuff is happening, and it's it just feels like it's coming down to the wire. So I'm looking for that apocalyptic, either be natural or cataclysmic, if it be from outer space, or if it just be from within ourselves, a nuclear bomb going off or whatever. I'm sorry to go on a tangent, but that's what it feels like to me.
I totally agree with you. Do you watch the show Doomsday Preppers? Are you kind of like that, or?
No, I have yet to see that. I'm almost afraid to watch that because I'm kind of like OCD, you know. So whenever I start doing something, I have to do it bigger, badder, and better than anyone else. And that's kind of like how I am, you know. So people that know me know that I'm definitely a different, unique style of individual. And I'm not ashamed to say that. I'm proud of who I am because I can only be who I am. I don't want to pretend to be anybody else. I am who I am. And that's it.
And you were saying you're kind of OCD, and Sherry said that you have a lot of mind chatter. I do too, and there's sometimes I get sick about it because I think too much and I worry too much about everything. So I tried to pick up some hobbies. I like RC cars, and pets are always good. I think birds are very relaxing, you know.
I also am a very big fan of nature, and I like being around nature, and that's what calms me and soothes me because the nature has survived everything that's been thrown at it on this planet. If the one thing that makes it through is that and cockroaches, from what I understand. But, you know, I like being out in nature and enjoying the things of nature. And I find that, much like yourself, if I'm not scuba diving or hiking or just looking at a mountain or looking at a star or just enjoying whatever's around me without having all the noise and, you know, all the craziness, but yet it's not as easy as it used to be because you know that it's getting worse, and every day and every second, every minute we're dealing with all this. It's not even worth it to me to look at TV, especially the news, because all it is bad. All you see is ISIS and politicians who are a bunch of, you know, joke of just, it's crazy. I mean, it's all one big three-ring circus right now, and it's not one that you would want to take your kids to, if that makes sense.
No, that makes total sense. The world is, I've always said it, the world and people are out of control. It seems like, and I could be wrong, but it seems like negativity, hate, violence has surpassed the good, but that's hard to know because all we hear in the media is the bad. Maybe there are more good people than bad people, but if you go by just what you see on the news or hear on the radio, it sure seems like everybody's out of control. And personally, I think that humanity is beyond the point of return. I think that there's so much negativity out there that something's going to happen. And whether it be an earth change or some global civil war or whatever, I'm kind of believing that something's going to happen soon. And I don't think it's going to be decades away. I think within the next few years, there's going to be some pivotal event. Something global is going to happen. And so that's just what I think. Sherry, what about you? Do you think that we're just being paranoid, or do you think that, you know, we're getting to a point where something big's going to happen?
I agree with you, Jason. I think something big is going to happen because it's ranging from the government to how people, the corporations, they're, you know, we're just living in a big, I don't mean to say this, but this is how I feel, in a big poisonous soup bowl. And there are few people or few organizations or people that are looking at, you know, holistic avenues and spirituality, you know, trying to find that balance. But we are overrun with corruption in our government to just even the city and the state. And, you know, it's terrible, from the food to the things we breathe, the air pollution. It's really unfortunate.
So let me ask you this, or both of you this. Is there anything that can be done? Or are we just on a path of self-destruction. To me, I think that the only way things are going to change is if something happens on a global scale and the population is so drastically reduced that people have to come together to survive and people will lose their ego and their competition and people will have to rely on one another again. And that's what I think will probably happen. I don't think anything's going to happen that's going to wipe out humanity completely, but I think in order for things to change, in order for people to go in a new direction of, you know, being positive, there has to be a drastic population reduction. And I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you on that, but in the same sense that either the world will reset itself in a catastrophic natural disaster, or it's going to be something outside of this world, if it be meteor strike, solar flare, blast, whatever, something from extraplanetorial, okay? The way the government is right now, like, the Second Amendment says that we have the Second Amendment so that if the government gets to the point where they actually are now, that we the people should be able to take the government back. Well, that's not going to happen, not without a big military fallout and probably some just really bad, almost like kind of show called Revolution. I don't know if you saw that, where all the lights go out and the little electronic bugs. I'm not saying that that's what it's going to be. But it's kind of freaky when you know, stuff like this is incorporated and you see it happening. Is it going to be the way that we are jacking around with our food? Our food isn't even real anymore. It's all genetically mutated and altered, and it's not even – you can eat it, but it's not good for you. What is it doing to people? If it's not that, is it going to be other countries like Korea or something like that? And yeah, it's going to happen. There's no doubt it's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And being prepared, you know, what are you going to do? You know, if you're a survivalist and you survive it, then the quality of life is going to be so hard. It's hard to explain this because in your mindset, it's just really hard to explain without using a bunch of cuss words.
Yeah. I know exactly where you're coming from.
Well, if it happens,
I don't know
what I'm going to do without Netflix.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to talk about hardship.
That's a good point right there, because technology is so far out. If we lost technology right now, everything would crash. People wouldn't know how to do anything. We can't do anything without computers, without internet, without telephones, without anything. We can't survive.
Back to the old roots. Yeah, but you need to go back.
Anymore. It's all antiquated. We don't have the old antiquated stuff, and it would all have to be remade again all over. All the files that have been destroyed, all the paperwork is gone. Everything's on flash drives or discs or CDs or floppies or magnetic whatever. And it's just unbelievable how things are. It's just really, really messed up, you know? Feel sorry for the kids that are coming into the world.
People wouldn't be able to check Wikipedia to see if a plant is edible. People would have like eaten bushes and eaten grass and start learning things by trial and error, and that would take out a lot of people in itself. But we're actually running out of time, so I want to thank you, caller, for calling into the show tonight.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you for your reading, and thank you, Jason. I appreciate it very much. I love listening to your show.
Great. Well, have a great evening.
Yes, sir. You too.
Good night.
You take care. Thanks a lot. Okay.
Well, there's a lot of good points there and a lot of topics that we could certainly talk about. I think we are at a turning point, and I think this world has gone downhill, and I don't think it's going to slow down. It's just going to get worse. But I'm also...
Totally. We're just getting the surface.
maybe I'm a pessimist. Is that, am I wrong for believing that? Maybe everything will turn into sunshine and kittens, and I'm wrong. But I doubt it.
Are you wearing rose-colored glasses?
No.
No, I'm just teasing you. Oh, my gosh, Jason. Yeah, it's really sad to look at the reality of our existence. And, you know, people go and strive and work so hard to, you know, make the almighty dollar, and just so that they can have, quote-unquote, and nothing personal among our viewers that have a nice place, but I call them fancy rat cages. Some are fancier than others.
Yeah, I would like to have a fancy rat cage. And a fancy car, but I don't. But yeah, people are too attached to money and to materialistic things. I mean, those things aren't going to serve you if everything falls apart. I mean, eventually you would have to venture out of your little castle and figure out how to survive. And everybody's going to be doing that. It's going to be chaos. Everybody's going to be, it's just going to be insane. So let's just hope that doesn't happen in our lifetimes.
I like the old bartering system, the old-fashioned system where, you know, everybody helps each other. It's a win-win situation instead of what can I get out of you, or how am I going to get anything from you, and you know, the heck with the other guy kind of thing, you know. How can we all win and make this world a better place? If we can have that, I think this world would be a better place.
And I think the only way that's going to happen is if there's, like, you know, 90% of the population was reduced. It's too many people. It's just, it's just going to be complete unrest.
Too many people. Look at the third world countries, especially, you know, India and, you know, Africa, China. Yes, we do. Even in the United States, we have too many people. There's so many children that need to be adopted. You know, I'm a firm believer, like animals, dogs and cats, there's so many that need to be adopted. Why buy one? And I'm a big proponent, very big proponent in animal rescues.
I like watching the videos. I see a lot of videos. A lot of them are from different countries, but, you know, where they find this dog who's starving, has mange so bad that he's got no hair, and then they rescue it, and then they show the dog months later, and it's happy, and, you know, there needs to be more of that in this world. But there's just a lot of people out there that are abusing animals and doing horrid things, and, yeah, we need less of doing bad things and more of doing
exactly.
good things.
Exactly, and it's up to the owner, educating them and wishing the way they had a policy where they would have to, if they had an animal, unless they are professionally using them for high-quality breeding, you know, they need to neuter and spay their animals. I'm really very much a believer in that.
Yeah. So next time, you know, for anybody that listens to the show, next time you're out, do something nice for somebody, you know, whether, you know, if you're in the drive-thru at, God forbid, McDonald's, which I do enjoy McDonald's every once in a while, pay for the food for the person behind you. I mean, just little random things, you know, makes people feel
right.
good, and I think gives you good karma.
Exactly. Or just in the parking lot, in a Safeway parking lot, let the person through when they're trying to get through, instead of beating them to traffic, you know. Yeah, just little things. I agree,
yeah.
Jason.
You don't have to buy people a Lexus or, you know, if somebody's got a flat tire, help. And, you know, there's various places in this world. We got to close the show, but real quick, there's various places in the world where there are people that get hurt and are laying on the sidewalk, and people just step over them. Like, what is wrong with humanity? You know, I've seen videos of that where people are hurt.
I've seen that too.
They're in the street. People just drive by, walk over them. They don't care. You know, they don't care because they don't know them.
I saw the one where, depending on how they're dressed, if a person is in the middle, you know, falls in the middle of the street and they have a business suit, people are more apt to pick up that person and help them and ask them if they're okay compared to a person who's homeless. So when a person is homeless, falls in the middle of the street, they won't pick them up. They just drive by and just ignore them.
That's so depressing.
Sad. It's sad. Anyway, on a good note.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, the show's over, and now who do we got coming up as guests?
Next Sunday will be from L.A. Coast to coast. Special guest will be Karen Dahlman. She is an expert on Ouija boards.
Oh, good.
She will talk about her 43 years of experience of teaching classes and working with Ouija boards. That's going to be very interesting because we're all trained and, oh my gosh, we need to stay away from the Ouija board. She will re-educate us and from her point of view, tell us about her experiences and how she teaches people to use the Ouija board constructively.
Well, I'm sure I'm going to have a lot of questions for her because I've brought up the Ouija board to I don't even know how many people I've talked to on this show, and it's like you were alluding to, the universal feeling is that it's terrible and a bad, evil gateway to hell. But so yeah, that should be really interesting.
Very good. Yes, that hour is going to fly by really fast, Jason.
And this hour flied by real fast. So yeah, let's close the show. I want to thank everybody for listening. Check out our Facebook page at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook, and hope everybody has a great, awesome weekend. And don't let our negativity about the world ending and people being terrible get you down. Hope you have a great week.
Yay! Pay it forward, everybody. Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.